The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
I'm your host, Beverly Prentice, and you're listening to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction, fantasy, myth, and adventure. If you enjoy the program, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com. Thank you. The Start of Something Beautiful by Zach Bay. Seven Cartagena floated in front of her window and watched the sun, the moon, and the earth dance along the orbital light plane. Few humans have, or would ever, get the chance to view the solar system like this in all of its cosmic grandeur. It was a transcendent, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for an artist like Seven, and it must have cost her patron, Lady Bethany, a fortune to secure her this spot on a lunar station. And yet, Seven had failed to make a single piece of art. This intrusive thought was only partially true. In the last few days, Seven had been moved to sketch a number of self-portraits of her face, each revealing varying degrees of muscle and bone. The images were painfully art school, and Seven could hardly believe she'd wasted so many of her limited canvases on them. With strained lines showcasing Seven's nascent attempts at drawing in zero gravity, the biological cross-sectional self-portrait evokes both the artist's fear of the deadly vacuum of space and its lack of atmosphere, and more deeply, her fear of failing in blah, 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 a dozen lazy critics and copybots would explain. The self-portraits would be worth something. Everything Seven created was worth something, and double for being physical media crafted aboard Apple's lunar orbiter Hype House Inner Orbital Station 1, IO8.1. But it was not what Lady Bethany was paying for. It did not speak to the journey, or the effort, or the vastness of the mystery. It wouldn't prove to anyone on the ground that Apple had the best Hype House in the solar system, meaning it wouldn't be good for the investors, meaning it would reflect poorly on a lot of people concerned with the bottom line. Seven looked over at the easel bolted to the wall, another gruesome face half-born on the current canvas. She was going to run out of precious physical materials and return to Earth with nothing to show for herself. Lady Bethany was old money, with stakes in Apple, no doubt, and Seven wondered if the lady would deal with her mismanaged investment in the old ways. "Might as well break my own knees now," Seven said. "Whoa, now," Zephyr said, peeking in from the corridor outside Seven's room. Self-harm alert! Seven would have flinched at the intrusion on Earth, but up here she had already gotten used to the impossibly close quarters in the first 2 weeks of their 60-day stay. There was nowhere to hide, nowhere to step outside. "I'm just thinking about the maiming I'll receive once I fail to deliver," Seven said. "I'm producing crap. You worry too much. Easy for you to say. You're killing it." "Yeah, but my content is all about quantity, not quality," Zephyr replied. "My management says 4 vids per day minimum for my socials while I'm in space. I'm like, what's so special? I mean, hell, aren't we always in space? Like, all the time? Can we ever not be in space?" "A sage observation as always," Seven said. "Add a dance and you've got a video. Your 25 million followers await." Everyone below a certain age knew Zephyr. "Let me tell you, Coro in zero G is a pain. Come down the hall and try it sometime. Your fans are waiting. Seven's management had begged her to make at least one such video per day for her socials, but she had been slacking. It wasn't possible to keep up with the black hole of content creation like an AI could. She had a respectable following of her own of just over 3 million, the bulk of which she had gained over a decade ago when at 13 she'd chanced into a main cast role as a time traveler's daughter on a comedy that streamed for an interminable 6 seasons. One of which had partially AI-generated scripts as a stunt. But the fans, the people, had grown up with her, and now they wanted to see her dance on demand like a trained seal in the never-ending meta-fictional spin-off series that was her life. "I should work," Seven said. "Listen, it really doesn't matter what you make up here. You're up here, get it? We can hear the gods whispering. Apple and your sponsor and whoever else, they're going to love whatever you do. Amazon's going to wish they had plucked you for their house over that lame squad of thirst traps they got, to say nothing of the Saudi Aramco house." Seven hated feeling like a pawn in corporate warfare, but she was the one who agreed to come here. She could have turned down Lady Bethany's offer. She could have stood her ground, ideologically. But this was space. And now, when we get back to Earth, I'm going to wish we hadn't come back, Seven said to Zephyr. Zephyr responded by grabbing a nearby pencil. "Knock on wood, TV. Oh, please. If Daniel hears you talking like that, he is going to throw a fit. The man is superstitious. Maybe it pays to be superstitious up here. I don't know if you paid attention in space camp, but what we are doing is dangerous as hell." Just then, a silent alarm flashed twice in the cabin. Mentor, their onboard AI, was letting them know it was lunchtime. "Why don't we get some space slopping you?" Zephyr said. "Cheer up, TV. You're literally in heaven. Inspiration is bound to come your way." Daniels was staring again. "What is it, Captain?" Seven said. "I'm still not a captain," Daniels replied. "So what are we supposed to call you?" Seven asked. "How about babysitter?" "Captain Babysitter it is, then," Zephyr yelled from up the corridor. Seven watched Daniels grimace. It seemed like every time he thought he got a zinger in on the content creators, they would just turn it around on him. Cheap wit was their job, after all. It was not clear to anyone on board that Daniels even had any social profiles. He was merely a scientist and an engineer and an astronaut with a decorated career at NASA who was rounding home base with a few years of this corporate gig before retirement. He couldn't be expected to be witty, too. "I'm staring because you barely touched your rehydrated kung pao," Daniel said. "I'm not really hungry," she said. "That answer doesn't fly on my station, Seven. You're losing muscle mass just by being in zero G. Nutrition is hard to come by out here, and you can't waste it or you'll start wasting away." "But I'm literally not hungry." "Well, I can't believe I have to say this to an adult who willingly came to the edge of civilization, but you're not going back to your cabin until you eat at least half of that. That's an order." "This isn't a military mission, Daniels." "You're definitely right about that," he said, sipping on his water tube. "I don't know what this mission is supposed to be, but it has nothing to do with anything I signed up for when I decided to be an astronaut." "That's just straight up mean," Zephyr called down the corridor. "Am I wrong?" Daniels asked. "They could have sent me up here alone and asked Mentor to generate some art for a lot cheaper, right?" "I am capable of being reconfigured to produce artistic interpretations from simple commands," Mentor said. Seven hated when Mentor's glassy voice would suddenly pipe in through the onboard speakers, sometimes after days of silence. It was an eerie reminder that they were being watched. Doesn't everyone just use the AI-generated stuff now anyways? Sounds like Mentor could have rendered as much art as Apple wants without all the hustle and fuss. It's not the same as having an artist on board, Daniels, Seven said. You're right. It would be quieter. Seven sighed, gearing up to attempt a defense of a purpose for which she was losing faith. Everyone uses AIs for everything these days, Seven continued. It's passé. Lady Bethany's whole point is to have art put on canvas by the human hand in orbit. It's inherently different than AI permutations. They're colds, a dime a dozen. This is about capturing the experience of being here. Even as she said this, Seven felt a pinch in her neck. There was something unfortunate about Apple having to send her 238,000 miles to the moon just to make her art interesting enough to compete for attention with the web's many freeware AIs. I get it, Daniel said. AI is the string cheese on the shelf, and you are the fancy brie on display. Sorry, Mentor. String cheese is a beloved delicacy of the industrialized Western world, the AI said. The whole metaphor didn't sit well with her. I like to think of myself more as a brick of pepper jacks, she said. I don't get it, Daniel said. I'm following, Zephyr shouted. She's idiosyncratic and spicy and still perceives herself as being of the working class, ready to fill an omelet or top a ground cricket burger. It's a good metaphor, TV. Hopefully this convo has built your appetite, Daniel said. Finish the kung pao. Seven looked down at the goopy stew inside the vacuum pack and sighed. Another silent alarm flashed in her periphery, followed by an audible honk. People paid good money on Earth to have AIs tell them when to eat. Mentor, I get it. You don't need to sound the alarm. That's not the lunch bell, Daniel said, and pushed through the zero-G toward a touchscreen. The alarm continued to go off rhythmically. What the hell is that? Zephyr asked, coming down the corridor. I can't record anything while you're doing that. Quiet, Daniel said, tapping furiously through various screens. Something serious? Zephyr asked. The content creators floated in silence while Daniels continued to tap through screens, cursing under his breath between bouts of technical jargon shared with Mentor. A minute passed, and then another. Seven started to notice a pit in her gut. She had never seen Daniels flustered like this. The man was always stoic. What's happening, Daniels? Zephyr asked, but the astronaut didn't respond. Daniels, Seven asked with more force. Our communications array just went down, he said, without looking up. Down? What do you mean down? Seven asked. As in it suddenly went offline. We can't communicate with Earth or the Chinese lunar base or anyone. Oh, Seven said. It didn't sound too bad. Things like Wi-Fi went down at home all the time. Daniels and Mentor were here to fix those type of things. When will it be back? She asked. I don't even know why it went down yet, Daniels said. But we are also getting emergency messages from Mentor about power fluctuations. What does that mean? Zephyr asked. I don't know, Daniels repeated, enunciating every word. We may have been hit by an MMOD or several. What's that? Zephyr asked. Micrometeor, Seven said, proud she had retained something from their 18 months of pre-voyage space camp. So, not a big deal, or, Zephyr said. Yes, it's a big deal, Daniel said. If the array is damaged and we can't get it back, we may be in trouble. No, no, Zephyr said. We can't lose connection. I have videos to send back to management in like an hour. Daniel scoffed and moved to squeeze the life out of his eyes with his thumb and forefinger. Your videos, he started and then restarted. This is a much bigger problem than your videos. We are flying blind without the array. Without laser comm, we can't get our navigational command packets. And without those... What? Seven asked. Mentors should be able to keep us in our near rectilinear halo, but it can't track all the debris or other ships and stations orbiting the moon. We could have a collision or get knocked off course. We'll have trouble leaving, too, but if it's a power linkage issue with solar, we could have a much bigger problem brewing. That's not good, Seven said. Obviously, Daniels tapped away at the screen. What do we do? Zephyr asked. We aren't doing anything, Daniels said. You are going back to your quarters while Mentor and I investigate. Are we going to be okay? Seven asked. Go back to your quarters. Seven pushed herself down the corridor to her quarters, unable to shake the feeling that Daniels wasn't giving her the whole story. She passed the empty room that was supposed to be for their third hype house guest, a musician named Brady Alm. He had made it all the way through their year and a half of space camp, only to crash his Porsche in a suspected DUI a week out from launch, leaving his seat empty. For a moment, Seven wished she could trade places. No more pressure to create. No more danger. No more Daniels. But she felt more embarrassed imagining a DUI on her record than coming back empty-handed or dying in space. Her self-portraits and blank canvases were resting exactly where she had left them, taunting her as the emergency light continued to bathe them in pale purple between honks. Can you at least shut off the alarm? Zephyr shouted, as if reading her mind. But Daniels didn't respond. The alarm beeped again and then again. How much danger were they in? The alarm stopped a while later, and Daniels called them both down to the central operating room. Comms are completely out, and we might be at risk for a serious power systems failure, he said sternly. Seven immediately felt a lump in her gut. Power systems, that's like air and water, Zephyr said. That's part of it, but let's not get ahead of ourselves, Daniels continued. I've located the probable impact site. Best case scenario is I can make interim repairs to the comms and request immediate support. I won't know until I'm out there. Out there? Zephyr asked. You're going out there? Don't have a choice, Daniels said. Control certainly knows we've lost contact, but they can see we are still up here. They are going to wait a while to see if we can fix the issue ourselves before they do anything. How long? Seven asked. It doesn't matter how long. It's too long. If there's damage to electrical linkages and we are in danger of losing life support, then we need to know that now, not later. Worst case scenario, we can use the capsule to evacuate to the moon and wait for China to pick us up. Not ideal. Seven looked down at her artist hands and investigated the charcoal caking her fingertips. This had all gotten very real, very fast. I can't believe this is happening, Zephyr said, reading Seven's mind again. You wanted to be an astronaut, Daniel said. This is what it feels like. This is what we do. He pushed down the adjacent corridor toward the EVA suits to prep for his spacewalk. Seven and Zephyr exchanged a brief glance, and Zephyr shrugged. Is this really happening? Seven asked. Hey, Daniels called from the EVA room. Which one of you feels most confident with the suit sports? All you, Micrometeor, Zephyr said, pushing Seven forward. Once they were all in the EVA room, Daniels pointed at the suit port doors. There were two on this side of the station. Small hatches built into the walls that opened into a spacesuit living on the outer hull of the station. Astronauts in shirt sleeves could climb into the pressurized suits and be on EVA in just a few minutes. Do you remember how to use these? Daniels asked. Seven looked at the touchscreens and handles and dials and readouts and listened to an intrusive uncertainty battle for dominance in her head. The necessary information was in her, even if it felt like it was behind a paywall. Yes, Seven said unconvincingly. I know you had the training on the ground, but I want you to both watch everything we are about to do closely, Daniel said. Mentor can direct you if need be, but it's no substitute for the real thing. Direct us to do what? to suit up, he said, in case there's an emergency. Even with their streamlined design, it still took 25 minutes for Daniels to prep, most of which he spent telling the content creators how little he wanted them to do. "Mentor will be able to handle anything I need in the cabin," Daniels said. "I did plenty of single-man operations like this back at NASA, just me and the AI. But we will keep the shortwave X-band open between us the whole time, just in case. If I need anything from either of you, I will talk you through it." Seven nodded and gave her best yes, sir. She'd learned all about the old AVA buddy system and its replacement by the newfangled AI buddy system at Space Camp, which itself was abbreviated from its previous 2-year training commitment, now that AI could be relied on for so many things. Up until this moment, Daniels and Mentor had continually reminded Seven that she was non-essential cargo. It was good to almost feel needed. They tested the radio, and then Daniels moved his bulky frame into the hatch. Zephyr watched from afar, chewing mindlessly on the tip of their water tube. Suiting up was all nervous potential energy. The hatch closed, and Mentor pushed the life support unit into place on the back of Daniel's suit, locking it in. Within 10 minutes, he was ready to disconnect. Seven and Zephyr barely said a word to each other as they watched and listened to Daniels go back and forth with Mentor over the pre-EVA checklist, checking life support, primary and secondary tethers, comms, and more. Finally, Daniels gave a fat thumbs up through the nearest window and undocked the spacesuit from the port. Tethered to the station and with heavy gloves gripping the nearest handholds, Daniels pulled himself along the hull toward the site of the problem. Seven shivered at the thought of all that empty darkness beyond the lights of the station. She shivered again when she realized the only person on board with any idea of how to save them had just stepped into infinity. There was near radio silence for almost 2 hours as Daniels and Mentor investigated what turned out to be a probable MMOD impact site. Seven and Zephyr spent the first chunk of that time with their eyes glued to the window, watching Daniels tinker in space. Eventually, Zephyr receded into the cabin and returned to work, apparently tired of the unbroken tension. But Seven continued to stare, somewhat in awe of Daniel's efforts. To be floating out there in the void, infinitely distant from the security of a warm spring day, body assaulted by radiation and stretched by zero gravity like a prisoner on the rack, and yet to remain so poised, to remain determined to endure. There was something primal about it that Seven had not considered, something deeply human, deeply animal even. "We might be okay," Daniel said over the X-band, knocking Seven out of her trance. "Mentor and I are going to attempt to patch repair, hopefully enough to get a message out to control." "Okay," Seven said. "Full transparency, at least one MMOD did shred some of our power couplings around the laser comm," he continued. "Mentor thinks it also went through one of the solar panels. Problems could progress, but we're going to try to get off the SOS and go from there." Seven nodded more for herself than anyone else and pulled her hands together, pencil in one and paper in the other. She started to sketch an outline of Daniel's helmet. So many things in space were so round, or at least rounded. The planets, the moons, the stars, even their halo orbit had been described to her as an oval. For a few moments, her hands felt free on the page, detailing the edges of the astronaut that was trying to save them. Then the nerves rushed in, and the fear of failure, and the pointlessness of the act in the face of danger. She dropped the paper and cursed. Lady Bethany didn't want her grade school sketches of an astronaut. She could almost hear the aristocrat's disappointed sneer echoing up to her from her mansion in Richmond upon Thames. "This might interest you," she heard Mentor say over the speakers. Look. Outside the station, one of Mentor's external arms spun toward Daniels along a track that circled the station's main corridor. The white tubular structure had five joints and a three-fingered hand. It worked its way into position and began collaborating with Daniels, extending its fingers into the damaged area. It was all just as Daniels had said. The AIs had more of an impact than Seven. She really was just expensive cargo. Seven spent the next hour floating, eyes closed, wondering if, like Zephyr, she should be more concerned with getting the comms online so she could send a post about her experience back to Earth. She even drafted it. Unscheduled blackout. Scary moment when our comms went down, but we are back. Your friend Zephyr and I are gonna have to share a drink over this one. Death-defying. Seven, Cartagena. Reading it back made her want to throw her tablet, maybe herself, into the airlock and inject both into deep space. Mostly done here, Daniel said on the X-band. I can see where the MMOD went through the solar panel. I'm going to take a look while Mentor finishes the patch. Listless, Seven turned back to the window. Daniels turned toward the solar panels and began to climb hand over hand along the station until he reached the solar panel truss structure. Seven gripped her Apple-branded jumpsuit as she watched the astronaut move further out. It's beautiful out here, Daniels said, momentarily betraying his well-crafted persona. But before he could finish, Mentor's arms swung out and away from the MMOD impact site, twisting wildly as it readjusted. The arm caught Daniel's primary tether in its jerking motion and tore its clasp from his suit-mounted harness before becoming tangled in the secondary tether. He shouted once more over the comm line as his body was wrenched from the solar truss and whipped back toward the main structure, bashing him against the aft quarters. He was flung back from the wall before being caught by his tangled secondary tether with a violent snap. Daniels! Seven shouted over the X-band, but he didn't respond. Mentor's arm writhed idly, struggling like a fish in a net to shake loose of the remaining carbon nanotube tether. Daniels hung limp in space off the tip of the arm, connected by that same tether. What happened? Zephyr said, pulling into the room and toward the window. The arm caught Daniels, and they got tangled, and Seven began, but found the words hard to come by. She couldn't catch her breath. An alarm went off in the cabin. An incident has occurred, Mentor said between beeps of the new alarm. There appears to have been additional undetected MMOD damage to my arm that caused a mechanical malfunction. Astronaut Daniels is non-responsive. What does that mean? Zephyr said. Is he dead? Vitals show he is stable, but he is non-responsive to attempts to contact. Oh, no, no, Zephyr said. What do we do? Mentor, call for help. LaserCom is still offline. I thought you were fixing it, Zephyr yelled. Repairs are not complete. Then complete them, Zephyr said. Stop, Seven said. Stop yelling, Zephyr. Well, what are we going to do, Seven? What the hell? Seven grabbed Zephyr's wrist and took a deep breath. Zephyr did the same. Mentor, what can we do? She asked. Unfortunately, my arm is trapped in the tether coil and needs external support to be freed. I do not know the extent of the damage to astronaut Daniels. He may need immediate medical attention. Collisions can cause concussions, internal bleeding, and other problems. I am still rerouting the laser comm internally. When complete, I estimate several days before help would arrive for astronaut Daniels. Oh, my God, Zephyr said, and Seven squeezed their hand. Can you get astronaut Daniels back to us? Maybe to the airlock? Seven asked. Based on his current position, I am unable to retrieve astronaut Daniels. Seven looked out the windows and watched the man floating out there, off the end of Mentor's broken arm. Maybe he would wake up on his own. Maybe he could bring himself back to the suit port and everything would be fine. Daniels, Zephyr said in the X-band. Daniels! Zephyr, he's out, Seven said. He's out. What do? We can't leave him out there. The content creators looked at each other, neither wanting to say what was required. I can't, Zephyr said. I'm not supposed to. This isn't what I'm supposed to be doing up here. Seven was about to say the same thing when she looked back out at Daniels, listing lifelessly near the station. What was it he had said before? You wanted to be an astronaut. This is what it feels like. This is what we do. She let go of Zephyr's wrist and grabbed the bulkhead above her for support. I'll do it, she said. I'll go get him. Seven floated in front of the suit port's hatch, frozen. Do you need me to repeat the instructions? Mentor asked. No, she said, hands still glued to a nearby anchor. I just need a minute. Astronaut Daniels has been free-floating for 15 minutes, non-responsive, Mentor said matter-of-fact. Seven always wondered if AIs knew they were being passive-aggressive or if that was a human reaction to their steadfast demeanor. Okay, she said, okay. Please don't die, TV, Zephyr said. Seven noticed they had a camera pointed at her. The content train never stopped, even when she was, maybe, about to die. Seven pushed herself feet first through the hatch and felt the suit slide up around her, almost like being wrapped in a cocoon. It was only when her torso slipped into the spacesuit with arms and fingers unfurling like roots into the outer reaches of her gloves that Seven realized she was in space. She had been in zero-G for weeks, but it was another thing entirely to find her feet dangling over the endless abyss. Then she remembered there was no up or down here, just void. She was dangling in eternity, and in all that emptiness, someone needed her. Daniels needed her, urgently. The hatch slid shut behind Seven, and she was alone in the quiet darkness of the suit. Daniels, the robot arm and the solar truss hung to her left, and the cold surface of the moon was visible off to the right. All she could hear was her own breath and Mentor's voice in her headset, trying to walk her through the egress. Slow down, she said. Talk to me like I'm five. Suit port undocking procedures were not developed for use by five-year-olds, Mentor said. Seven tried to control her breath as she focused in on the pre-EVA checklist. The life support unit slid in behind her and locked into place. As it happened, she found her mind drifting to the strange sensation of having her arms swim through open space, of having what felt like just one flexible layer of spacesuit between her shrimpy body and exposure to the endless. She realized then that she might be minutes away from death. She would never get to say goodbye to her parents, or her siblings, or her dog, or her followers. It felt like the walls of the suit were closing in. She could have thrown up if she had eaten anything. You're going to be okay, Zephyr said. Check your primary and secondary tether, Mentor said. Seven could feel how much extra exertion it took to move her arms inside the suit. As she reached for the first tether, she checked the suit-mounted clip and then pulled on the link station-mounted carbon nanotube wire and felt it draw easily along its winch. Primary check. Secondary, she said, but as she pulled the second line, she felt it stick. She pulled again, and then again, but it was no use. This one is stuck, Seven said. You will need to exert more force than normal to maneuver within the suit, Mentor said. Now the AI was talking to Seven like she was five. I know that, she said. I'm saying it's stuck. Seven tugged several more times with both hands, but the tether refused to move along its winch. It's not moving, she said. It's possible it was also damaged by the MMODs, Mentor said. Or it's just a piece of junk like this whole station. Also possible, Mentor said. The station will need a significant amount of evaluation and maintenance after. What do I do, Mentor? Single tether EVA goes against NASA guidelines, Mentor said. However, this is not a NASA orbiter. Based on existing data, you are at low risk of primary tether failure. Daniel's primary line literally just failed, Seven shouted, because of your arm. And statistically speaking, it is very unlikely to happen again. Mentor knows, Seven said, tugging harder on the jammed secondary tether. You gotta relax, Seven, Zephyr said. Easy for you to say, she yelled. It would be prudent to conserve energy, Mentor continued. I recommend you unhook the secondary tether if the winch is jammed. Astronaut Daniels may have limited time. Seven closed her eyes and let the frustration pass through her. This was about saving Daniels. She took a deep breath and nodded before unhooking the secondary line. Pre-walk complete. All systems go, Mentor said. You are cleared to undock, Astronaut Cartagena. Astronaut Cartagena, Seven thought as she replayed Mentor's words in her head. She turned to the window and gave Zephyr her most convincing thumbs up. The clamps released behind Seven, and suddenly she was on a mission, in space, one hand on the nearest anchor and the other gripping her tether. You're going to have to pull yourself toward Astronaut Daniels, Mentor said. Seven was shaking, afraid to let go of the tether. The tether has you, Mentor said. Seven slowly unclasped her hand and grabbed the next anchor. What in God's name was she doing out here? The intrusive thoughts wanted all of her attention. They wanted to remind her that she was a terrible artist who couldn't craft one worthwhile picture given this amazing opportunity, that she had no business being on a space station, that space stations were for explorers and scientists and people trying to save the human race and content creators with vision, not washed-up child actors who liked to draw. But there was Daniels, floating free, incapacitated. There was at least one person in the solar system today who actually needed her, right now. She looked over at the solar panels and saw the abnormality. This was where the MMOD must have passed through. What if I get hit by another meteor? She asked. Depending on the speed it was moving, it would most likely pass through your suit and you, causing a fatal decompression, Mentor said. She felt the pit in her stomach grow as her imagination filled in all the gory details. Is that likely? Seven asked. No, Mentor said. It's not impossible, but it is statistically very unlikely. You could have led with that, Seven said, but Mentor did not respond. Seven climbed along the hull until she reached the base of the robot arm, still twitching under the pressure of the knotted tether. How's it look? Zephyr asked. Seven grabbed a length of the tether near the arm and tugged on it. It felt like trying to bend steel. I'm not going to be able to untie this, she said. There was silence on comms for a moment. Seven looked up to track Daniel's spacesuit tether. Both tethers started in the same spot, but whereas Seven's was free, Daniel's was pulled off to the left, coiled and trapped in the joints of robot arm. Near the top of the arm, the rest of the length of rope wound outward toward Daniel's, creating an arc from suit port to arm to Daniel's. I'm going to climb it, she said. Maybe if I can get to him, I can wake him up or what? Zephyr said. He's trapped within the arm. Seven needed something, anything. She looked down at her own tether and tugged on it. Once I get out to him, I will detach him from his line, attach him to mine, and then drag us both back, Mentor. Will that work? Hypothetically, the AI said. Although disconnecting your tether in open space is dangerous to... All of this is dangerous, Seven said. And you told me to leave my safety line behind. That was my suggestion, yes, Mentor replied. Seven scoffed and started pulling herself up the long, twitching arm. Damn, Zephyr said. Quiet, please, Seven said as she mounted the arm. She grasped at bulky joints and links as she pulled herself up along the structure. If she let go or slipped, She might float away from the arm and get stuck like Daniel's, having to pull herself back in and start over. Her breathing became more labored as she worked. Everyone always said space was cold, but the suit was surprisingly hot. She knew she had learned about this at the space camp, but it didn't matter. All that mattered was grabbing Daniel's. After several minutes of climbing, she arrived at the point where the tether pulled away from the arm and out toward Daniel's. Daniel's! Seven tried again over the X-band. Daniel's! But there was still no response. Should I pull him in? Seven asked, hands on the line. If you pull him, then you'll have to catch him, Mentor said. This creates risk for another collusion, this time between both astronauts. I suggest going out to him. Damn, Zephyr said. Seven cupped both hands loosely around Daniel's tether and pushed very lightly off of Mentor's arm. Slowly, she slid toward him along her line, her body just a tiny speck of life amidst the ocean of dark matter all around them. She used the pressure from her hands on the wire to slow as she got closer to Daniel's. She couldn't see his face with his visor down. Daniels, if you can hear me, don't move, she said. I'm going to attach you to my tether. Any sudden move could send them floating away from each other. If he suddenly spasmed or woke up flailing, they could end up getting pushed by each other in opposite directions while detached from tethers. Adrenaline pumping, she used one hand to grip Daniel's line and her other to work on manipulating her complicated buckle clasp. I need two hands, she said after her first attempt. I need to have two hands. But no one responded. Mentor was calculating, and Zephyr was silent. Okay, screw it, Seven said, and squeezed both legs around Daniel's line before unclipping herself from her own tether. She was now completely detached from the craft. Any sudden move, any small mistake, and Seven could be thrown back toward the moon, the sun, or further, still out into the cosmos. Dead, eventually, but the first of her kind. An alarm went off in her suit, alerting her that her only safety clasp was detached, holding onto her tether, legs cramping as they squeezed around Daniel's line. Seven eyeballed the length of wire she would need to reach from her waist to Daniel's. Fumbling in the gloves, she tried her best to tie a Boy Scout knot around the complicated carbiner safety redundancy that sat next to the clasp on her own waist. That knot is going to break, she told herself. You're going to get both of you killed. I've got this, she said again to no one in particular. The knot was a Frankenstein's monster of loops and boxes, screaming of desperation. She tugged on it a few times and then turned toward Daniels. I'm going to have to unhook him from his own line to attach mine, Seven said, more telling Mentor than asking for permission. There was no response. Seven reached her hands forward and unhooked the old line from his waist, not realizing that her movements created the small amount of force needed to push him away. Seven heard Zephyr's strangled yelp over the comm line as she and Daniel started to float away from each other. Daniel's now completely unmoored from the station. Seven swung her arms, desperately trying to catch any part of Daniel's as they slipped away from each other. Her glove traced past his elbow before it caught his hand. She gripped like a lioness biting down on prey and pulled him forward, pushing the end of the clasp into his waist hook. The click of the clasp reverberated through both suits as she locked Daniel's carbiner redundancy in place. She had him. Now she had to get back. I can't watch this, Zephyr said. It occurred to Seven that the easiest thing to do would be to drag them both back down her line to the suit ports, plug Daniels into the wall, and then herself. How hard could that be? Mentor offered some distant suggestions, but Seven couldn't hear it. It didn't matter at first anyways. She pulled hand over hand to create some velocity, and then using the tether as a brake, towed Daniels in behind her. You're doing great, Zephyr said, apparently still watching. Almost there, Seven said. That was when Daniels woke up. He didn't wake up gradually, as far as Seven could tell, but all at once. It was a single jolt, followed by a shout of fear, likely the one he was trying to release when his skull got ping-ponged inside the spacesuit in the first place. In shock, his body began twisting in the suit as he tried to regain a sense of where he was. "Astronaut Daniels, please relax. There has been an accident," Mentor said. "Daniels, stop!" Seven yelled, but it was too late. His twisting caught the knot and yanked on Seven's carbiner, breaking her free of their single shared tether in the process. She had apparently missed some key detail in locking the contraption amidst the rush, and now she could be lost. Besides her hands on the line, she was once again completely detached from the station. Only this time she was already moving with some velocity toward the structure, as was Daniels behind her. Seven felt like the loose floorboards of the universe had just collapsed beneath her. Resisting the urge to flail like her cargo, she reached forward at the last second, grabbed an anchor on the hull, and kicked her feet up against it, using all her might to stabilize herself as Daniels crashed down behind her. Leaving one hand on the anchor, she spun back and grabbed Daniels before he pinged back off the station again. Her muscles tightened, the tension peaked, and then it was over. Everything was still. Daniels, apparently self-aware again, grabbed his own anchor and pulled himself in. "Seven?" he said. "Is that you?" She breathed heavily. "Yes," she said. "Thank you," he said. "Thank you." Mentor guided Seven and Daniels through spaceport ingress until Zephyr helped them both climb back out of the hatch and into the cabin. They were all wordless for a long time. "I'm okay," Daniels said. "I think I just have a concussion." "Just?" Zephyr asked. "With the repairs we made, I should be able to get an emergency message through the laser comm in the next 36 hours. Mentor said. "I can provide medical guidance with assistance from the crew until then." "Then what?" Seven asked. "NASA will probably back-channel something to the Chinese, have them send support from their lunar base," Daniel said. "We are about to be international news. I guess you both are used to that." They offloaded in silence for a while, no one wanting to say what was true. They had just walked on a knife's edge, and they had gotten lucky. After several minutes, Zephyr glided back down the corridor, nothing left to say. Seven turned to do the same, but Daniels stopped her. "What you did for me," he said. "Thank you." "I can't believe what just happened," she said. Daniels smiled and nodded. "Why don't you take a rest," he said, waving away Seven's attempt to offer support. "I'm going to be okay. I'll let you know if I need anything." And then Seven was back in her room, back at the window, back with her dwindling art supplies and promises. She could hear the tapping of Lady Bethany's stylus on her tablet somewhere in the distant future. A feigned look of sympathy for Seven's plight on her face, covering a fear that she might not get a return on her investment. "What are you going to do, Seven?" But Seven knew what she was doing. She didn't necessarily need the charcoal, or the blenders, or the pencils, or the canvases. Seven just needed to be here, in space, to live as a human, in the great empty, here. Survival was the new art, and she had started something beautiful.